Broadcast Studios. This is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Thanks for joining us the show today. Ray Mondragon, Creation Science Fellowship, in studio with us. Ray, welcome.
Well, we're here to have some more fun.
We are. Well, you know, a lot of people, you know, they get in conversations with friends, even family sometimes. And, you know, you have what we've called, theological evolutionists and, you know, people that are just trying to meld the two things together. And what we've done in the last year, year and a half, is we've talked about everything from evolution versus, can't talk, creation science. And we've been talking lately about the geological evidence for a worldwide flood. And of course, everybody's familiar right. with Noah and, you know, the ark and all of the things that went into that story. But a lot of people will read that story and go, yeah, I believe the Bible's true. But I don't really think about it long enough to know that it really is true and right. that there's science to back it up. And that's what we've been talking about now
right.
for several months. And you're going to talk a little bit more about it today. What I'm hoping we'll do here in the first segment is go through a review of everything we've talked about.
Not everything, just the
geology, historical. There's a sure. conflict between what you call historical geology and creation science
right.
in the way the data is interpreted. The data is not really disputed. That's the interesting part.
No.
It's just,
we look at the same identical data, but because we have different presuppositions about the past, mm-hmm. different worldview, we view that data from a different perspective. And we would say from the biblical perspective, we have more data because we have information that the Bible gives us.
Mm. So when you look at the geological layers, the geological table, the geological column, there's all kinds of different terms I've heard used mm-hmm. for it. You're looking at that data as a creation
science.
Same
rock layers.
And you're coming up with all kinds of differences. So I want you to talk to us a little bit about the evidence for historical flood that we've already talked about so far.
Well, we started out, I tried to explain the two different models. In other words, the two different ways of looking at the same data, as we've just mentioned. And essentially, the evolutionist sees the rock layers and he presupposes, it's an assumption. He can't prove it. He assumes that those layers were laid down by processes that we're familiar with today. That's called uniformitarianism. And if that be the case, then you can make some calculations and figure out how long, or they estimate, it would take to lay down each of these layers. So they come up with a long time frame of millions and millions of years for the laying down of all of these layers. So their number one assumption is, if you look at things today, project back, you can come up with long ages. Mm. Now, the assumption is the faulty part. The calculations, you could make them, and they're reasonable. And in fact, a lot of Christians even buy into it. But if you say that that's not a good assumption, a better assumption, coming to it from a different perspective, taking in the data of Genesis 6 through 9, that there had to be a catastrophic event that is described in great detail, then there's the possibility that those same layers, that same evidence from the rocks, could have been laid down by a catastrophic flood as it's described in the book of Genesis. So that's the essence of the two different viewpoints. And we started with that. And then we evaluated some of the evidence that you can look at. In other words, looking at the rocks, there's all kinds of fossils. In fact, each layer above the Precambrian layer is identified based on the fossils that it contains. So every one of those layers, about a mile deep in some places, you can see about a mile depth at the Grand Canyon, all the way down below the Cambrian layer. Those layers are identified based on the fossils that they contain. They call them index fossils. But we would say that that represents the death of all of the creatures that were destroyed as a result of the judgment that God brought on the planet. And what we can observe is the depositing of material that the Genesis flood and the waters ripped up then as the waters began to slow down and recede, made these layers that you can see today.
Well, Ray, as you're talking, you're thinking about these conforming layers, you know, very symmetrical. Some are thick, some are thin. And you're thinking about fossils within those layers. But you've told us about polystrate fossils, which go through mm-hmm. maybe four layers.
Exactly.
Like a tree, you know, a big redwood tree or something like that. So,
and that's a problem with the evolutionist. He doesn't right. have a good explanation for how this tree could go through several layers. So we looked at some of that evidence. In fact, that was one of the more powerful pieces of evidence that there had to be some catastrophic event that laid down all these layers.
Let's talk about the layers. Let's say that you have a tree that's 200 feet high. I mean, I don't know how tall they are. But then you have a layer that, you know, is 50 feet thick.
Mm-hmm.
And it covered up the bottom of the tree. Well, right. if it took millions of years for the next layer to be laid down, the wood rots and is gone. There's no way it gets encapsulated in right. mud or rock. So right. you're postulating that that happened all at one time and mm-hmm. completely.
Or relatively, you know, yeah. within days or right. sure. hours even.
But it completely enveloped the tree.
Exactly.
And you can see the layered rock that's turned into rock.
Exactly.
At one time it was sedimentary, you know, it was mixed up in the water, mm-hmm. not dissolved, but it was floating in the water.
Right.
And then when this sediment
was transported.
And so when it's, and that transported thing was not necessarily a real relaxed kind of thing. It could have been a violent event, right?
Well, the rushing waters were mm-hmm. a violent event, but as things began to stabilize and slow down, then you get material settling out.
But you mentioned levels. That there are beds of fossils where the evidence shows that rushing water just swept all this stuff and brought it into a central area, which is like a mm-hmm. ponding area.
Right.
And then you have these big beds of all kinds of fossils. And those are evidence all over the world, right?
Right. Yeah. Fossil graveyards. Mm-hmm. So we started off with just the existence of fossils takes catastrophic events.
Mm-hmm.
And you have them throughout the layers, so you have lots of catastrophic events that are not formed typically today under normal circumstances. So just fossils, and then polystrate fossils, and then fossil graveyards. And like you say, these are not localized phenomenon. These are things that you can observe all over the world. So gives evidence of a worldwide flood.
So, Ray, I want to back up for just a second. I want to talk to people that are people of faith, people that have said, yeah, we believe Jesus is Lord and Savior of this world. And he came to this earth for us, sacrificed himself on the cross, rose again, and lives today. That's really the important
exact
part, right? So,
right, right.
I mean, this is fun to talk about,
right,
and
right.
this could be something that encourages our faith. And for me, I like to talk about it because so oftentimes people of faith are attacked
exactly
in the area of science or even logic.
Right.
And I'm just here to tell everybody that's listening, you really can't be attacked in these areas anymore because whatever the argument is against you has no credibility.
That's right.
And that's what we're trying to state on this show right. is for you to be able to think through all of these different things.
And so, the bottom line is we're trying to give people confidence that what God says in his word is not only true, but it's accurate. In fact, we would say it's inspired and inerrant. And I stress that when we speak of Bible inerrancy, I think it applies not only to theological issues, but it's inerrant when it deals with science and history or any area of study. And that's our bottom line, is we want to give people confidence in when God speaks, you can trust what he says in his word. When he talks about things in the future, like our destiny, heaven and hell, we can trust him. And we need to believe what he has revealed in terms of being able to escape, for example, the future judgment that is in fact coming.
So in addition to these layers and the data that you've just talked about, creation scientists interpreting differently, what else have we talked about?
We talked about the layering. That was the main topic that we looked at last time. And I gave you, if you go to the Grand Canyon, you can actually see these things. In fact, if you look up at the crest, remember we used the Sandia crest as an example of a Pennsylvanian layer, and it has fossils in it. And just below it is a radically different geological structure. That would be basement rock. You see the crest? That's Pennsylvanian. You would, if you're observant, the difference between the crest and the rock below it is the boundary is called the Great Unconformity. And we would say that would be the bottom of what the Genesis flood destroyed and ripped up. And then that Pennsylvanian would be a redeposited layer that came about as a result of the aftermath of the Genesis flood.
We had an interesting discussion with a friend that you brought on the show, and she talked a little bit about, you know, she's worked in genetics.
Right.
And has really evaluated all the things we're talking about of a fossil at a cellular level.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know that there have actually been fossils that have been discovered now, dinosaur fossils,
right,
that actually have soft tissue still inside of them.
And even DNA.
And DNA. And so DNA, a secular scientist would say, is only going to last so many years.
Right.
So how do these fossils have DNA in them if they're that old?
That's right. And we made the point at that time that the secular scientist places most of the dinosaurs, in fact, they would say dinosaurs went extinct 65 million years ago. So if they went extinct 65 million years ago and you can find fossils in that layer, in what's called the Jurassic layer, and they have soft tissue, even blood cells, even DNA, and you can look at it today, then the evolutionist has a real problem there, or the secular geologist has a real problem there.
When we post the podcast of these broadcasts, I put links to all of the different resources, and everything that we're saying is documented.
Yep.
You know, we're not making anything up. This is real right. Science. You've been studying it and teaching it for a long time. So I want to point everybody to a couple of different websites. Creation Science Fellowship of New Mexico is CSFNM, so for Creation Science Fellowship of New Mexico, .org. So CSFNM.org. You have a great website, too. Give us that
for
website.
For His Glory, F-O-R, For His Glory, NM.com. So fairly easy to remember, For His Glory, NM, and then all you have to do is remember the .com.
And you last night, and we mentioned this on the show, were speaking at the Creation Science Fellowship gathering that happens the third Tuesday of every month. It's
correct.
Free.
Right.
And I was surprised to hear, you thought it was a small crowd, but 25 people or so coming into that, that sounds like a lot of people. So there's a lot of interest in this.
Well, I think there's a lot more than... You know, I think people just need to know about these resources and the information that's available. The big thing is I think most people just are not aware. So part of us doing this is to try to get the word out.
And then we have a Facebook page. It's called Facebook.com/ABQ Connect. And we have linked it to the Creation Science Fellowship page. And we're going to try to figure out the technology. Maybe somebody can coach us on this, how we connect that to your webpage. But what kind of things do you have on your website for people to look at?
Well, I have a whole tab. It's called Creation Science, and it's got all of the recent talks that I've done last 3 years, I believe. And I haven't uploaded the one from last night, but it'll be there. And the various places that I've spoken. In fact, this program that you're doing, I download it and upload it to the website as well. So there's an entire creation science area, I guess, that you can look at. I also have entire seminary courses. I teach seminary courses for Chafer Theological Seminary. And most of the courses that I teach, they permit me to put them on my website, so they're all there. Now, we recommend that people register with Chafer and take them through Chafer, but there's a lot of people that can't, or there's a lot of people that just need a portion and they can't sit in a regular class. So I'm permitted to put them on my website. So entire seminary courses. And basically what I do week by week is just teach scripture. I just teach the Bible and I teach it sentence by sentence. And I'm going through the book of Romans now. So I have an exposition portion that has most of the Bible teaching that I've done in the last few years here.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's get back now to the support for the worldwide flood.
Right. Great.
And we've mentioned, and we'll bring up those websites again. They'll be posted on our abqconnect.online podcast site. And then again, we have Facebook / abqconnect. So we're trying to make sure that people have things available. Of course, KNKT Radio, which is the station that we're on, also is connected to our abqconnect Facebook page and everything else. So everything's kind of interconnected and you can get all kinds of resources that you want. You are familiar with some other people that we've talked about on this program. Like, for example, Dr. Brian Nixon. He is the gentleman that is in charge of publishing for Calvary, New Mexico, Calvary Albuquerque, Calvary Church. Steve Ryman keeps shaking his head at me like, get the name of the church right. You've only been going here for 40 years. I date myself because we started off as Calvary Chapel, but now we're Calvary Church. And I've seen that happen with almost all these churches, Citizen Church and Sagebrush Church and Legacy Church.
Hoffmantown Church. Used to be Hoffmantown Baptist.
Yeah, that's right. So everybody's kind of changed their name and changing with the times. I do want to say that during this time, we're still, you know, staying at home quite a bit. People are working out of their house. I'm all for, you know, binge watching a show once in a while, but not every day. And these are the kinds of things that you could do, especially with your children or your spouse. Spend a half an hour, spend 45 minutes going over some of this information online, and it'll lift you up. It'll encourage you.
Well, I hope so.
And that's why it's there, and that's why we're doing this, right?
Right.
Well, we have got a lot more with Ray Mondragon. Stay with us on ABQ Connect. We'll be right back.
How does KNKT mean business? KNKT is in the business of sharing the gospel. KNKT is also supported by local businesses who we, in turn, encourage you to support with your patronage. Here's Steve Ryman visiting one such business.
We recently had a chance to catch up with Buck Buckner, the owner of Rain Tunnel Car Spa. Here's what he had to say about doing business locally.
Hey, Budge. Car Spa and other local businesses are joining forces to launch a campaign called Local First. It's a call to action to spend our hard-earned money with locally owned businesses. Why local? For every dollar spent at local businesses, the economic impact on our local economy is 3 to 4 times that of the same dollar spent at a non-local entity. With them, profits beyond minor repairs are exported. Local businesses reinvest in the community again and again. Local businesses are completely dependent on community support and thus have a much deeper tie to the neighborhood. Local businesses are as competitive as non-locals. They hire local, promote local, and operate with far less employee turnover. National tenants are not a critical piece of our local economy and arrive only years after local business success. Where are those nationals? Sports Authority, Marcello's, Borders, Raley's, Copeland's, Zia's. Poof. Gone. Legislators, along with American Express, suggest we take one day to buy local. Nice thought. Don't they know our local businesses operate 365 days per year? So think, act, and do local first. Shop local, dine local, wash local, bank local, construct local, search engine local. Follow local media. And finally, to increase the coffers for an even greater Albuquerque, keep it local.
To hear your business featured on KNKT, email advertise@knkt.com.
You're listening to KNKT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Ray Mondragon, Creation Science Fellowship in studio with us today and having some fun talking about the evidence of the worldwide flood that could be found in science. Ray, anything else that we need to review that we've gone over to this point? Because I know you've got a lot for us today.
Right. Well, mainly what we tried to stress last time, and I'll be brief and then we can move on. But basically, if you look at the layers themselves and the boundaries between the layers, just the extent of the layers, for example, the layers extend, some of them clear across the United States. I mentioned one that you can see on the way to Santa Fe. It protrudes on the surface there, but it then goes underground. But that one goes all the way to Canada. And these layers are very similar. In other words, they're the same material. So you have the same material deposited, which makes more sense in terms of a massive flood than it would be in terms of millions of years. In other words, where did this same material come from and why is it all in the same place?
And Ray, we want to contrast that with what maybe secular science has speculated. A lot of them have said, well, there is some evidence that there was flooding, more localized, not a worldwide flood, mm-hmm. which of course means that if Albuquerque was underwater and Santa Fe wasn't, then that layer wouldn't be continuing all the way up.
No. And it goes all the way to Canada. And there's others that go from California to New York. And that's the case all over the world. In other words, Europe has the same type of blanketing, you might call. Mm-hmm. So we looked at those evidence, and we saw the sharp boundary between these layers argues against long ages because you would expect erosion and not sharp boundaries, and you see that continuously all over. And there were several other things. There's a sharp difference that I've already mentioned, the great unconformity. That's not a name that creationists have given. That's secular geologists have named the Great Unconformity because there's a radical difference between the rocks above it and the rocks beneath it. Rocks beneath it are igneous rock, basement rock, and everything above is sedimentary rock laid down, more than likely, by water. Now, evolutionists in the past tried to say long ages of wind and deposited by wind, but they're more inclined to see because the evidence points to water. So all of those layers were laid down by water, and we would say by the Genesis flood. So everything from the great unconformity upward would be flood destruction and then redepositing after the aftermath and the receding of the floodwaters.
Was the receding of the floodwaters, I know you weren't there. I'm a little older than you, so maybe I was there. that wasn't necessarily a peaceful just receding of the waters either, right?
Well, it would have been a gradually more and more peaceful, and that's why you have different materials settling out at different layers, at different levels, I mean.
So, for example, when you mention a fossil graveyard, that probably happened more when the water was going over the earth,
right,
rushing onto the earth.
Right, and then depositing all of that, probably early.
Yeah. And the Bible doesn't just describe that all that water came from rain either.
No. In fact, most of it came, I think, as a result of the phenomenon that we described, fountains coming as a result of heated rock, in fact, volcanic rock at the bottom of oceans, coming in contact with the ocean, shooting up into the atmosphere, just volumes and volumes of water that would supersaturate the atmosphere and produce a 40-day rain. So that's part of the flood model that creationists try to give as a model.
So sometimes I think, Ray, we have to take you scientists and we've got to calm you guys down a little bit because your brains are always going. Do you guys ever sleep?
We try not to.
I mean, I can't imagine.
Can't break the habit, though.
You're just constantly evaluating and testing and thinking. And the one thing that I like most about this is that there seems to be less bias. I know there is a bias. Every human being has some kind of bias.
Yeah, we have a bias, but we admit it.
Well, and you also try to see around it and see if it's blinding you in any way.
Right.
But when you are a secular scientist and you've just made an assumption there can be no God, you're not seeing around that.
No.
You know,
no.
When you start looking at DNA, when you start looking at cellular structure of any living human being. I remember watching Josh McDowell give a discussion one time about his book, Evidence Demands a Verdict. He spoke down at Johnson Gymnasium. And he said during this thing, he said, do you see this watch in my hand? Would you say that your body is more or less complicated than this watch? Well, obviously we'd all say it's much more complicated. He says, well, if I crushed this all up into dust with a hammer and smashed it and threw it in the Rio Grande River, what is the mathematical possibility it would reassemble itself into a watch anytime in the next 10 billion years? Well, that sounds silly, but that's exactly what evolutionists believe.
It's silliness.
Mm-hmm. That somehow these complicated, you know, organisms went from an amoeba to an NFL football player. And I don't understand the science behind that. I don't understand the thinking process that even gets them there.
Yeah, we make the point that even one single cell is more complex than anything man has made, much less a watch, more complex than a computer, more complex than the space program that put a man on the moon. One single cell is more complex. And microbiologists that are evolutionists are the ones that are saying this.
But yet, microbiologists that are evolutionists believe that there was at some point I've heard it called the primordial ooze.
Mm-hmm.
You choose the temperature you want it to be. You choose how many years ago you want it to happen. The interesting thing to me is you can take any single-celled organism you want today, and science can measure with exactitude the recipe. What is that? What's the structure? What are the chemicals? What are the, you know, what is that made up of?
Well, we've been able to unravel the DNA molecule even today.
But here's my point.
Yeah, I know what your point is.
We can get these instrumentation and all the things that we have.
Try to put it together.
Yeah. In the scientific method, I understand that it says you can replicate kind of what you see in nature. And scientists can try from here to you name it. They're never going to create life.
Nope. Or even a DNA molecule.
How is that science? So I want people to be encouraged. You have not left your brain on the doorstep when you ran off to school and told somebody that you were a Christian.
Exactly.
You are absolutely right where God wants you to be. Familiarize yourself with some of this information. Make your education really count, because the more graciously you talk with people about this and you share things that are true, not just biblical truth, but scientific truth, people mm-hmm. are going to be encouraged. It's going to change their lives.
Yep. Yep.
We are going to be back with more with Ray Mondragon. Stay with us on ABQ Connect.
Patient with High Desert Hospice, something as simple as a caring touch, a smile, a prayer, or even just physical presence can bring comfort beyond measure.
I offer caring, comfort, and support to patients and families at a very trying time in their lives. Making a difference is a wonderful blessing, both to them and to me.
Discover just how easy and fulfilling volunteering with High Desert Hospice can be. Go to highdeserthospice.care. That's highdeserthospice.care and click on volunteer.
I'm Rob Snead, general manager at Power Ford. If you're tired of old school gimmicks and games while shopping for a new car, then experience something new school at Power Ford. We'll give you a better deal and a better experience. The better deal part? We'll beat any new Ford deal in New Mexico or put $1,000 cash in your pocket. The better experience part? You rated us best of the city and Ford dealer of the year. Find your ride at mypowerford.com or come see us. We're on the affordable side of Albuquerque, on Montaño, west of I-25.
Call 888-243-8183 for details.
Tired of being quarantined? Have the pandemic blues got you down? Having a food choice crisis? Let's talk about a solution. In queso emergency, head straight for Casa Taco, winner of Albuquerque the Magazine Best of the City 3 years running. Come try the signature brisket and green chili tacos, carne asada tacos, and the amazing puffy tacos, plus much more. Convenient online ordering at casa-taco.com. Two locations in Albuquerque and one in Elephant Butte. Casa Taco.
Gonset Physical Medicine specializes in the diagnosis and treatment of spinal ligament injury. Don't ignore the pain and discomfort any longer. Schedule a consultation today at gonstead-nm.com or 505-884-8584.
On KNKT, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
At the hands of Steve Ryman, we are back with you this afternoon. Thank you, Steve, for producing the show today. Ray Mondragon, Creation Science Fellowship in studio with us. Ray is a retired engineer, and he teaches at Chafer Seminary. He also does a lot of work for Creation Science Fellowship, teaches Bible studies, rides his bike everywhere he goes. So I don't know how you're ever on time. But you always are.
Engineers look at their watch.
Ah, a watch. I could tell you this. And we've been joking around about younger people. Like, I have five younger kids. And, you know, we've talked about most of them don't have a watch. Cell phone is everything to the X-geners, right?
Right.
And I guess there's Z-geners now. I don't know. Mm. But, you know, we didn't have cell phones. We didn't have all that stuff. We actually had to wear a watch, and not one of these fancy Apple watches that you can talk with people on and all
right.
of that.
One that had 12 numbers on it.
Yeah, they can't. I don't know if they can read a watch. That's an interesting thing. One of the things that I thought was funny, too, is I'd like to see them use a compass.
Mm.
You know, when you know, you remember those. The compasses that we had, like in Boy Scouts and stuff, they had a little sight on them.
Right.
And you could turn and figure out how many degrees you were walking, you know, south of or east of north or whatever direction you're going. And kind of, you could even draw a map and keep coordinates. Mm. That was kind of fun. I'm not sure that, you know, they cheat and look at their GPS on their phone now. So that's absolute cheating. But that's good stuff. That's getting out and looking at things. And before we go on today about talking about catastrophic events and how fossilization could even be occurring today, review for some things that people can see themselves just around New Mexico.
Well, last time we talked about Sandia Crest, and we would say that the crest itself, that layer, the layering that you can observe, that's, geologists call it a Pennsylvanian, that's actually in the middle pretty much of the geological column. Mm. So there was either erosion or non-deposition of some of the other layers that are in the chart. And I did mention that the chart is theoretical and a composite of what you might expect around the world, so you don't have necessarily a complete example of every layer everywhere. In fact, the geological column doesn't exist anywhere in its completeness. So, yeah, you can look around. I mentioned La Bajada Hill. That's a you can see a volcanic layer above that. What is it called? The Morrison Formation, I believe, if I remember right. But basically, Grand Canyon, not too far from here, you can see lots of layering and lots of evidence of the Genesis Flood.
One of our friends of the show, Paul Gessing with the Rio Grande Foundation, just mm-hmm. took his family to Yellowstone. So sent all kinds of pictures of everything. There's all kinds of mm-hmm. geological, thermo
right.
stuff
right.
going on under the ground, which in some ways is kind of scary. You know, what's making Old Faithful spout off is boiling water.
Right.
Ejecting from the ground every day at a certain time.
In fact, that's a good segue. What happened at Yellowstone, I know you didn't plan this, but what happened at Yellowstone, God did for us relatively recently. In other words, Yellowstone is a result of a catastrophic event, and Old Faithful is simply some of the aftermath of that event that is not observed, but in geological time, was a volcano. Yellowstone was a volcano at one time that exploded. In fact, there's a crater that you can observe that geologists know about. So the transition is we want to talk about evidence that you can look at that God provided for us to demonstrate, I think, that he can accomplish in a very short period of time some of the phenomenon that you can observe, for example, Sandia Crest or Grand Canyon or anywhere else on the face of the earth. So I'd like to talk about what happened at Mount St. Helens, 1980. Can't believe it's that long already, but what God did there with that volcano produced a lot of the phenomenon that you can observe in other places that the evolutionist says took millions and millions of years to accomplish, and God did it in some cases in a matter of hours, and then in other cases as a series of events of aftermath of the first explosion of Mount St. Helens.
So, you know, the explosion of Mount St. Helens really affected air traffic in this country.
Oh, absolutely. Because, well, it affected lots of things, yeah.
Well, I remember it because we were flying to Salt Lake City to play a game against the University of Utah, and the way we routed our flight, I don't know how they did it, but they had to come in from as far east as possible
to avoid the ash,
yeah. So it was a kind of an interesting thing back in those days. But I had no idea until we started talking about this that there was so much debris and so many things that were encapsulated. So tell us about that.
Yeah, and keep in mind, put it into perspective, we're talking about one event that took place in comparison to the whole world, a very small, localized event. Now, if you were there, you wouldn't describe it as small because it was huge. But in comparison to what we're talking about in terms of the Genesis flood, Mount St. Helens is like a little pimple on the face of the earth. And in 1980, May 18th, 1980, the mountain essentially exploded. It didn't erupt in a typical fashion where lava came out of the crater, but instead a side of the mountain built up pressure, and the mountain essentially exploded and cast out debris upward, sideward, in every direction, and caused a lot of damage in that area. Now, you have to keep in mind, this is a very well-known area, lots of hiking trails, well-forested, well-studied, geologists knew all about it. In fact, ecologists and forest people had it well mapped. So we know a lot about that whole area. And once you knew what it was like before and compare it to afterwards, it is extremely dramatic in terms of what happened there. And I'd like to give a quick glimpse of some of the phenomena that took place. So on that day, May 18th, well, preceding that day, scientists knew something was up because there were tremors, little earthquakes, little movements, shaking. So people were aware that something was happening. The place was evacuated. Some people refused, stayed. Obviously, they're buried there. Mm-hmm. But this was well studied, well observed, particularly amongst geologists and seismologists and those that are associated with all of the phenomenon. And they knew something was up, and there was this huge bulge on the side of, obviously, the mountain, the north side, and it began to progress. In fact, I have a photograph of a man taking measurements well away and a photograph of that bulge. And then on May 18th, 1980, the mountain exploded, and scientists have estimated that it released energy equivalent to the explosion of one atomic bomb per second during the duration of the event. And over that, they would estimate about 30,000 atomic explosions. So a massive amount of material was not only ejected, but it caused a lot of disruption on the mountain itself. Some of the things that happened, obviously, was material came out from the, obviously, the mantle. So you're talking about lava. But the mountain in May would be covered with snow and ice to great depths. So all of that melted very rapidly and sent torrents of mud and debris and all that was in the path down into this valley at the foot of the mountain, the Toodle Valley. In fact, you can visit it today and see. Filled up that valley with sediment, with all of this material, not just that came out of the mountain itself, but material as it ripped up in its wake, eroded that whole area. And you can look at photographs, satellite photographs, you can see a just immense scar on the face of the earth there. I've got some of those photographs. Unfortunately, we can't show it on radio, but what it did is it ripped up material, short period of time, matter of minutes, hours, redeposited this material in this valley so that you have layering. You have actual layering that has stratified. And what we mean by that, it has become rock. And as a result of a series of different events, we have different layering. You have the initial layering of the first explosion that launched material up into the sky, the ash and other material that fell back to earth. And then mud flows with all kinds of debris, trees, probably animals if they didn't disintegrate. And it deposited all this material. Now, if you study those layers, in fact, again, I've got photographs of these things, and you could look at them. And if you did not know what had happened just days before, and you evaluated as a secular geologist would, you would have to come to the conclusion that it took several million years of slow deposition to develop the layers that were laid down. In other words, if you come up with the same assumptions, you could come up with the same idea as what you would do if you went and looked at the Genesis flood from the secular perspective. But scientists know all of this took place in a matter of hours in case of some of the deposits. For example, on May 18th, there's a layer, and then June 12th, same year, there was another eruption that put another layer on top of it that's 25 foot deep. That would represent millions of years from the geological secular viewpoint. And then 2 years later, there was another eruption that put another layer about 5 foot on top of it. And all of that is stratified. In other words, it is rock. And you could not tell the difference between that rock and perhaps rock that you might observe somewhere else in the geological column.
But there are differences between the layers.
There's sharp boundaries, mm-hmm. just as we observe in the Grand Canyon. There are also deposits. Now, I haven't heard, but you would expect that there would be creatures that would be fossilized. Mm-hmm. There is what is called Spirit Lake, not at the very bottom, but in that general area. Spirit Lake was filled with debris and layering. And Steve Austin has done a lot of studies there. Geophysicist, I think he is, or a geologist at least. And he has discovered polystrate trees embedded in layers, much like the polystrate fossils that we discussed when we were talking about fossils.
And again, this is like God's experiment right in front of us, showing us that this could have all happened in
hours.
A similar thing like this could have happened with the worldwide flood all mm-hmm. over the earth.
Right.
And that's why we want to tell people about it.
Exactly.
We are talking with Ray Mondragon and the scientific evidence for a worldwide flood as you read about in Genesis. Stay with us on ABQ Connect. One more segment left. We'll be right back.
New Mexico, we love it, but it's no secret our state is left behind in some very vital social issues. Child hunger, single parents, and abortion, to name a few. The people of God can and must take action. That's what Mission New Mexico is all about at KNKT and Star 88. This month, featuring Landel Benally of Calvary Chapel Tolokai on the Navajo Nation.
It's very encouraging when you pull up at a house and these elders or these kids come running out to you, and just to see the joy in their eyes to receive the food, it's really uplifting, and it encourages you because you're doing it for a purpose.
That's Landel Benally of Calvary Chapel Tolokai on the Navajo Nation, this month's Mission New Mexico. Loving our neighbors in practical and productive ways is Christianity 101. At KNKT and Star 88, we are a megaphone for New Mexico needs as we provide a clear call to action. Find out more about supporting the work of Calvary Chapel Tolokai by clicking the Mission New Mexico tab at knkt.com or star88.fm.
Here's Mike Fabares, Bible teacher on Focal Point.
You know, when we're in a dark season of personal pain, it is easy to begin questioning God's goodness. Man, I know that. That may be a natural response to our discomfort, but it certainly isn't the right one. Instead, in Psalm 107, we read that those who are hurting should purposefully quote, here it is, give thanks to the Lord, for he is good. God's goodness, the psalmist reminds us, can be seen in the ways he's delivered us from previous bouts with trouble and pain. And of course, the greatest example of his goodness is our eternal redemption from sin in Christ. You may be in a dark season, but remember that God is good. Whether your suffering is the result of some unfortunate circumstance or some poor decision of yours, know that God is gracious and he can deliver.
Right thinking leads to right living. Want more? Power up with Pastor Mike Fabares on Focal Point, a half hour of hard-hitting Bible teaching here on your station. Or check it out online at focalpointradio.org.
You're listening to KNKT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
As we're talking with Ray Mondragon today about creation science and the evidence for a worldwide flood that you find in actual evidence, geological evidence on the earth. Of course, a lot of people have had us listen to us talk with Dr. Stephen Collins, who is an archaeologist and has done a lot of work up, especially at the Tell al-Hammam dig in the Jordan Valley, which is the site of the ancient city of Sodom. And they have found, as you talk about a layer, he did not disclose this on the last, and I don't know the actual facts, but there is a layer that has been identified, Ray, that is similar to melted dirt and debris.
Right. A burn layer.
A burn layer.
Right.
That would absolutely coincide with the fact that that city was destroyed by fire.
Yes.
And I
intense heat.
Yeah. And intense I tease heat. That, you know, maybe that was God bowling, because it could have been done by a meteor coming from heaven.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that in the past few weeks, they have made a substantial discovery, which is going to be released sometime in the next 90, 120 days, I hope. But he explained that there's all kinds of things that have to happen. They're not going to be releasing this information. Actually, secular scientists on their dig have made this discovery. And it's going to be interesting to see what they, how they respond, how they explain away,
right,
you know, what we believe is something that God did.
Right. In fact, in some of their initial finds, Steve had some of that material tested, and he didn't tell the lab what it was. And the lab said, oh, this is trinitite. Did you get this from the atomic explosion site out on White Sands? And he said, no, this is not from White Sands. This is not trinitite.
Yeah.
But it's trinitite kind of material, in that intense heat basically melted the sand, crystallized the sand into.
Well, and what, that's really, you know, we're talking about lava. We're talking about Mount St. Helens. People don't understand how hot this stuff is.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking off the air, I didn't say anything to you, but I'm thinking about here's this stratified layers that are laid down in Mount St. Helens in a matter of hours. And you said a secular geologist would have a hard time if they didn't know what had happened and evaluating
right.
it. But the whole time you're talking, I'm thinking about, well, the fact that it's about 1500 degrees might bother them a little bit.
Yeah.
but that's exactly what happens. I mean, this, mm-hmm. all this stuff has a melting point.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's talk a little bit more about Mount St. Helens and how fossils may even have been formed in the last few years.
Right. Well, one thing that we can point out also that's kind of an encouragement, the event of Mount St. Helens has in fact affected secular geologists. Now, they're not flocking to Christ or they're not necessarily asking questions about the Bible, but they are rethinking a lot of their uniformitarian assumptions, and they are far more open now to catastrophic explanations. I'm not saying they've crossed the line yet. Maybe a few of them have, but in general, at least it opened the door for creationists to be able to discuss catastrophic explanations as opposed to long periods of time. So Mount St. Helens, I think, has caused a little bit of a ripple, at least, in the geological community. So if you want me to discuss just a little bit more on...
I'm thinking in my mind that if you take a close look at creation, look at the leaves on the trees, look at the forests, look at the rivers, look at just the beauty that we have in this world, I almost think you can't refuse God.
Right.
If you take a close look.
Well, that's what the Bible tells us, that if you look anywhere, in fact, any science is going to give evidence. This is what the Bible says. Clear passage, Psalm 19:1, the heavens declare the glory. In other words, broadcast it. So if you study astrophysics, you ought to see something of the glory of God in those studies. But that's true of any science, and particular geology as well. So let's talk about a little bit more on Mount St. Helens. And if you desire, we can wrap our discussion of the flood up. And next time we can go into another area of creation science. We could talk about coal and oil. What forms coal and oil? We didn't discuss that.
No.
But coal and oil fit in very nicely. In fact, coal are the remains of plant life. And the evolutionary explanation is very, very weak, especially when you have a layer of coal, say 80, 90, 100 feet deep, and there are some that are even deeper than that in Pennsylvania, other places where you have thick coal layers. How do you explain that? The best explanation is tsunamic waves of water ripping up entire forests and depositing them like those fossil graveyards, but instead of animals, you have an entire forest compressed and localized in such a way and compressed in a way that it forms coal. Similarly, oil could be explained as the remains of animal life. So that would be another kind of fossil graveyard. So that's a whole area that we could discuss as well, that I think the Genesis flood gives a better explanation in terms of what you can find in the geological record. But let's kind of wrap things up in terms of Mount St. Helens. Created a crater about a mile wide, which is relatively small if you could compare it to others. For example, right here in New Mexico, you asked where can people go. The what's the caldera?
The Valle Caldera.
That was an exploded volcano in the ancient past, before recorded history. That is, I don't know the numbers, but...
And a caldera volcano is one that doesn't go up like a cone, mm-hmm. but it's like a crater.
Well, it exploded.
Yeah.
And cast debris. And everyone recognizes that it's the remains of a volcano.
Well, and, you know, people already know about the hot springs in Jemez and right, some of these other right. things. A lot of that is all related because you can find hot springs exactly. and other kinds of volcanic activity going on now.
Because it's close to the surface. Mm. But that's an example of even a larger explosion that took place before recorded history right here, right, Los Alamos, right, 100 miles away from us, as an example of what you can observe. And we mentioned at the very beginning, Yellowstone is another one. In Oregon, Crater Lake, that's another example of the same thing. Now, we don't have records of that, but we do have a record of Mount St. Helens. Mount St. Helens is only 1 mile in terms of the crater. And yet, when you look at the results, they estimate over 200 million cubic yards of material displaced. And then all of the layering for over 50 feet deep. And one of the interesting things that also happened as a result of the aftermath of Mount St. Helens, after all that material was deposited, and I'll have to look up the date here, March 19th, 1982, there was another, at least tremor, if not a little earthquake, that released much of the waters in that Spirit Lake. And the release of those waters carved out from that material. That's why you can see this material today, because it carved it out and created a 1/40th scale Grand Canyon. You can observe that today.
Wow.
And that is exactly what God did. The aftermath of the Genesis flood, after the layering that you can observe in the Grand Canyon, there's evidence upstream in Colorado and Utah of ancient lakes. And you can see the banks, they're evident. There had to have been massive amounts of water that obviously remain from the Genesis flood. And if, in fact, there was some disturbance, an earthquake or something, released those waters, that would explain how the Grand Canyon, rather than being carved out over millions and millions of years, shortly after the Genesis flood, would have been carved out in a matter maybe of days. Because the event at Mount St. Helens was carved out in 1 day. A 1/40th scale Grand Canyon that you can observe today. Scientists know about this. Geologists are aware.
But Ray, you think maybe the reason that people don't accept the story of Genesis, and again, we've mentioned several ministries, you know, that Ken Ham's ministry, Answers in Genesis, very well known, talking about these very subjects. Again, Creation Science Fellowship, your website. You think people just don't perceive God as large enough, big enough, great enough, so they don't think this stuff can happen that quickly?
People don't read their Bibles.
Yeah.
We need people get into the Word and take God seriously, take issues of salvation seriously, listen to a witness from someone that knows the Lord. Basically, we need to shake up our culture. Hopefully some of the events are opening doors for us to share the gospel with people. And by the way, we've said several times, it's not this evidence that brings people into a saving relationship. It's the gospel message, the simple gospel message that any believer can share with any other person that doesn't know Jesus Christ. All this evidence is just to give us confidence, give us a basis to be able to trust what God has said so that we may be able to, with confidence, share the gospel message.
And that starts in Genesis?
Genesis 1:1, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth.
And I think that people can sit back and just be amazed at what God has done, because
absolutely,
it is spectacular. The very fact that we live and walk and we breathe, I don't want to be related to some fish that crawled out with two equally, what's the word I'm looking for?
Stumps.
Mutated legs.
Two stumps. That,
yeah, I mean, you said to this a long time ago, how does a fish, mutations don't happen equally
positively.
And positively. You know, a fish didn't grow two equal legs and walk out of the water. He might have had a leg grow, but that would have made it so that other fish could grab him and eat him, and
that's
that would
right.
have been the end of that, right? So there's all kinds of things that we talk about, and we're going to have some fun A couple minutes left, but we're going to talk about an old universe, young universe. And Ray, as we get into this, I may have to get Dr. Collins over here because we'll have to talk about it. You know, he's a guy that's studying the same stuff.
Right.
And he tells me, yeah, I used to be a young Earth guy. Now I'm kind of an old Earth guy. And I want to have that conversation with you.
We need to bring him back home is what we need to do.
Yeah, he's here. He's here. I had him on the show here 3 or 4 weeks ago. Ray Mondragon, thank you for joining us on ABQ Connect.
Jim Williams is a production of KNKT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KNKT. If you missed any or part of today's show, get the free podcast at abqconnect.online.